The Sunstone Foundation presents Bound for Terrestrial Glory, recorded live at the 1989 Sunstone Symposium, held August 23rd through 26th in Salt Lake City, Utah. We now take you to the University of Utah campus where the program is about to begin.
If you can't hear, just raise your hand. When I went out to get the paper this morning, I saw a little flower in the snow. The sky was gray and the wind was blowing, but she was standing bravely in the cold. So I knelt down and I said, if you're looking for a butterfly, little darling, you're about 2 months too soon. 'Cause I've been waiting for my butterfly since way last autumn, when I know damn well she's never coming home. I might as well fall in love with a flower if I'm not gonna see your face again. I might as well live and die like a flower in the snow, looking for a butterfly in the wind. Well, I took that little flower and put her in my window, 'cause I knew she'd never make it through the storm. When I wake up tonight, I'll see her from my pillow. I wish she could keep me warm. I might as well fall in love with a flower if I'm not gonna see your face again. I might as well live and die like a flower in the snow, looking for a butterfly, looking for a butterfly, looking for a butterfly in the wind. Thank you very much. My name is Bob Christmas. I'm from Pasadena, California. I look out there in the parking lot, and I'm the only California plate out there. I guess people don't bring their cars up here anymore. They fly or something. So anyway, I'm very happy to be a part of the Sunstone Conference. It says in the thing it's supposed to be comedy, and about the only thing I can think of that's comic about it is the fact that I'm doing it all at all. It's a routine. It's not routine for me. This is very new sort of thing. I can tell you a little bit about myself. I am a Latter-day Saint, for better or for worse, kind of representing the Jack Mormons, I guess, or something. That's an example of, well, let me just go back. I've been a songwriter for years. I've been a poet, and I've taught college, and all that fell apart. So now that I started out as a folk singer, and I'm kind of back to where I was before. I write songs. I spent about 10 years off and on trying to sell my songs in Hollywood part-time, singing across desks and so on. I've never sung in front of a laboratory class. This is new. But I have sung across some of the more prominent desks in Hollywood when they used to do that before everything was by tape. Well, that didn't work. I haven't sold a single song. I've published a number of poems and some fiction in Dialogue and Sunstone. So here I am trying to make sense out of all this sort of material that I've written over the years. I write some songs that are straight country. If you like country songs, maybe you liked that one. I write things besides country. But we might do another little country song. I found out my songs weren't really... The first one I played is probably about as commercial as I get. And it gets crazier, folks, so if anybody has to leave, it's okay. This is another country song called Cowboys Are Breaking Hearts, Not Horses. It's kind of an angry song. You know, I get kind of tired of all this worship of the cowboy. I want to be a cowboy. Everybody wants to be a cowboy, but I get tired of the mystique and the machismo and everything. This song is written kind of for a lady who's sick and tired of cowboys, okay? Cowboys, cowboys, cowboys used to chase the bad guys out of town. Now they're chasing skirts and pulling them down. They used to say, thank you, ma'am. Now it's just wham, bam, and scram. I've seen more cowboy bull than a rodeo clown. Cowboys are breaking hearts, not horses. They're living in bars, driving sports cars, and causing divorces. We better bring back the old Lone Ranger, 'cause things are getting way out of hand. I'd rather have a silver bullet than some worthless wedding band. Cowboys, hey, find the chord, Bob. Cowboys used to punch cows and help with the foaling. Now the only hay they see is the hay they roll in. And they used to tell little white lies. Now it's overnight alibis and tossing up ladies' hearts to shoot a hole in. Do, do. Well, anyway, that's Cowboys Are Breaking Hearts, Not Horses. How about that? From my folk song days, and there's a couple of kids here. I'm glad to see that, really. Keep me sober. I spent a lot of my time in southern Utah, and when I was a folk singer and did some work in folklore with Tom Cheney down at BYU, we collected some songs in southern Utah, and there was also a Folkways album by a man named L.M. Hinton. I don't know if anybody remembers him. He was a folk singer and an old gentleman that knew all the songs of the pioneers. And this is one that I've kept from years ago. It's called St. George and the Drag On. St. George and the Drag On. Oh, wasn't this a dreary place when first the Mormons found it? They said no white men here could live, and the Indians prowled around it. They said the land it was no good, and the water was no gooder, and the bare idea of living here was enough to make men shudder. Oh, mesquite, soap, root, prickly pear, and briar, St. George ere long will be a place that everyone admires. Now, this was before Bloomington, you know, okay? Oh, now green Lucerne and verdant spots redeems our thriving city. And vines and fruit trees grace our lots with flowers sweet and pretty. Where once the grass in single blades grew a mile apart in distance, and it kept those crickets on the hop to keep up their subsistence. Oh, mesquite, so blue, prickly pear and briar, St. George ere long be a place that everyone admires. Last verse, I promise, last verse. Oh, the sun it is so dad-blamed hot, it makes the water scissor, and the reason why it is so hot is just because it is, sir. The wind with fury here doth blow, that when we plant or sow, sir, we place one foot upon the seeds and hold them till they grow, sir. Oh, mesquite, so brute, prickly pear and briar, St. George ere long will be a place that everyone admires. And it is. I like St. George. There aren't, as I said, I don't have too much left from my old folk singing days, but there is an old song here that also on the Folkways album. I'm sure it's long out of print or collector's item, but it's another kind of a cute one. It's a polygamy song. It's called Zach the Mormon Engineer. I was once advised not to sing this song in at ward parties. But I think Sunstone's radical enough, isn't it? We can do it here. Oh, Zach, he came to Utah way out in 73. A right good Mormon gentleman and a bishop, too, was he. He drove a locomotive on the DNRG. With the ladies he was popular as he could be. And when he'd whistle, now I've got a sound effect on this one. There we go. Mama'd understand that Zach was headed homeward on the Denver and Rio Grande. Now Zach, he had a wifey in every railroad town. No matter where he stopped, had a place to lie him down. And when he was a-comin', he wanted them to know. So as he passed each wifey's house, his whistle he would blow. And when he'd whistle, come on, Bob, Mama'd understand that Zach was headed homeward on the Denver and Rio Grande. Now Zach, he claimed to love his wives and love them all the same. But always little Mabel was the one that he would name. And when he would pass her, he'd blow his whistle loud. And when she'd blow a kiss at him, old Zach would look so proud. And when he'd whistle, there we go, Mama'd understand that Zach was headed homeward on the Denver and Rio Grande. That was good. In some ways, I've been kind of a wag, too. In addition to writing country songs, I've also written some novelty songs and Maybe the novelty will wear off here real fast. I don't know. We'll see. But these are just like uncommercial type things. You know, all of us, with regard to the opposite sex, have little things that we notice, don't we? And little things that we prefer. I mean, gentlemen prefer blondes and some prefer brunettes and some people are into eyes and some people are leg people and some people are this and that. I don't want to run this into the ground. I mean, I've only got 15 more minutes or something. But some of us have a little bit more exotic problems. And that's what this song is about. I'm not going to get too exotic, so don't worry. But the song will explain itself. I'll just have to. This is kind of a confession, but I'm not alone. Some of you, the minute I start singing this song, are going to recognize this. Everybody loves something about the opposite sex. Some folks are wild about legs or hairy chests. But my favorite part, when I'm walking down the street, isn't hair or derrieres, no. I got a confession to make. I'm into teeth. I'm a fool for an overbite. I like a smile with lots of white. So if you've got one, come on and grin it. I like a kiss with some choppers in it. I'm a fool for an overbite. I like a mouth that's not uptight. A pretty lady might stop my truck, but if she ain't buck, you know, old Bob's out of luck. So if you've got braces, I'll let the other guys want you. I just can't get excited about all the dungeon. You can get your kicks over muscles or jugs, but I like my bunnies to be cute as what? Cute as bugs. Bugs, you got it. I'm a fool for an overbite. I like a smile with lots of white. So if you've got one, come on and grin it, Margaret. Come on and grin it. I like a kiss with some incisors in it. I'm a fool for an overbite. I like a mouth that's not uptight. A pretty lady might stop my truck. She ain't buck, I'm just out of luck. Oh, the world's full of dentists. Everybody's going straight. I just gotta do something before it's too late to promote my hang-up on the sexual scene. So I'm gonna take all my money and start a magazine. No, it won't be dialogue, it won't be Sunstone, it's gonna be I'm a fool for an overbite. On the cover it'll say Think White, a naked smile in the centerfold, with no wires and no caps and no gold. I'm a fool for an overbite. Every issue will be dynamite. Where sufferers can find relief, salivating over sexy teeth. Okay, I don't know. What do you do after that, you know? was reading Kirk Douglas's autobiography, and he said he had the same problem. And I think my first girlfriend, you know, had kind of, I don't know, buck teeth or something about it. I don't know. I figured after all these meetings, you know, where all these fine points are being discussed, maybe you want to rock out or something. I'm not the one to do it, but it seemed like maybe we ought to have a dance or something. So that's what this is all about. You know, if you want to keep eating, I don't even care if you smack your lips or anything. I don't know any Mormon jokes or anything. This is supposed to be funny, and it is kind of funny. We've had a few laughs, right? I don't take requests because I can't play anything but my own stuff. That's kind of funny, isn't it? I only know one Mormon joke, and I have to take my glasses off to do it. I don't know why I'm wearing them anyway. But it's the only Mormon joke I know is this one, the only one that's original, really. And it's this one. You know what this is? Bishop, how long does this fast last? That's it. That's it for the Mormon jokes. I've been in and out of the church. I'm kind of in right now, thank goodness for me. But I've been a member of the church over 30 years, and I've kind of had maybe about half of those have been good years. In case anybody's wondering, I'm a chairman of a PAC committee, Little Cub Scouts, and I'm a singles representative in my stake. So I do go to church and try to live the gospel, and I've got a testimony of the church. The only problem is that I'm still kind of whacked out, and I still write these songs that I don't know what to do with. At the meeting last night, I was really touched by the speakers and really hit a chord with me. Of course, I've been kind of sloppy and spilling my guts for years. Some people don't like the way my guts look after I spill them, but anyway. I've been married a couple of times, and like I say, I'm just back to being a folk singer again. I'm a manager of a manufacturing company, operations manager of a company. I do sales. Most of the time I push paper. I'm not, you know, an exotic artist or anything like that. I just go to work every day, and then I come home, and about 10 o'clock at night I get out my guitar and go crazy. This is, like I say, I've been married a couple of times, and all of us have had times when we've been lonely and lost and maybe in love and the person's gone and the pain and all that stuff. You know, songwriters, that's a staple, right? How could we survive without that? This is called Another Day Without Your Smile. We'll try to rock this one out. I don't know. We may not make it. Another day without your smile. Another breakfast with the blues. I put the coffee on and go get the paper. Turn on the radio instead of your laughter. Another day, what can I say? Come on now. Another day without your smile. Another evening at the bar. I drink too much and fall in love with the waitress. Wind up hungover at some strange address. What a mess. Another day. No other way. Living in this cold, neglected style. A Dear John letter would only make me better. Don't tell me you're so shy. You can't even say goodbye. Another day without your smile. Another blanket on the bed. I pop a can of beer and stare at the TV. The news is bad, but there's
A late, 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 late movie. Godzilla meets the son of Gomer Pyle. Another day, what can I say? Another day without your smile.
Okay, you know. Enduring the pain, but the pain is still the pain. Now we're getting there. I've always had kind of a weakness about romantic songs. Maybe it's my background or my history. I've never been able to write really, truly romantic songs. When I was teaching at Southern Utah State years ago, I was teaching a poetry class in the afternoon, and there was a long-haired hippie-type kid. This was in the late 60s. And he'd come in the class every afternoon and sit there. He never turned in a paper, flunked all the examinations, and nothing happened. I gave the guy an F. Turned out I found out later that he was coming to my class from jail. Down there in Cedar City, you know, things are kind of informal, and if you're fairly well connected and you're in jail on a chemical charge of some kind, they were letting this young man out so that he could go to school, which was a good thing. And he was in a rock band, and he kind of a wild kid. I'm going to tell you his name in a minute. So he's a wonderful kid. But I didn't get to know him right away. I flunked him. I gave him an F, and I felt all righteous about that. And later I came to know him better. And later on, I came to know his wife, and we socialized. And after I left off teaching in Southern Utah, they visited us in Southern California, and we would visit them in Utah, this much younger fellow. But he was a tremendous lead guitarist. And he wrote songs. And I remember he came to my house in Covina, and he played this song for me and just knocked me over. It may not knock you over, but it just knocked me over. It wasn't finished. He couldn't finish anything. So eventually we collaborated. And to make a long story short, this song, I did about 50% of the lyric, maybe about 75% of the lyric on this song, and the melody is his. And my co-writer on the song, his name is Alan Grimshaw, and he comes from a little town called Enoch, which is right outside of Cedar City. If any of you know where, if you know where Grimshawville is, then you really know Utah cold, you know, especially Southern Utah. But this is a romantic song. It's called "You Are Everything Called Love." The way you come to me, your kiss a flame, your voice a melody, a valentine, a rose, a dove. You are everything called love. The way you come to me, a silhouette upon a stormy sea. You are the moon and stars above. You are everything called love. And when I'm lost, when my stars are crossed, you always find some way to ease my mind. The way you come to me, a happy ending that was meant to be. The future I've been dreaming of, you are everything called love. Everything called love.
everything called love.
Thank you. But Alan is really a beautiful melody writer, and I'm delighted to be able to sing that song and to mention his name. He used to be in a band here in southern Utah called Crossfire, I think it was. I don't know if anybody goes to dances around Zion Park or Panguitch or anything like that, but they used to play. Now he lives in Las Vegas. Okay, well, here we go. What's that? A poem? Yeah, I thought maybe we'd change course a little bit. You know, my fingers are bleeding from this heavy rock riff I've been playing. Would you like?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do some poems. We'll do a few poems. I was going to start this thing off with a poem, which kind of sums up where I'm at, in a way. In 1964, I was teaching in Pocatello, Idaho. It was my first teaching job. And one afternoon, I came home and sat down at my little card table there on this little house I was renting up on Lander Lane, if anybody knows Pocatello. I'm telling you this because I like to hear stories about how poets write poems and where they write them. And I sat down at this little card table, and in about an hour, I wrote this poem out. Except for just maybe the last couple lines. It's just one of the few times I've ever just struck it off. And it's in a very formal verse pattern. I sent it. It was published in BYU Studies in 1964. They backdated the issue. That's why it's published the same year I wrote it. But anyway, so if anybody's interested, that's where it is. It's called To Joseph Smith. And since this is a Latter-day Saint type of conference, I'll recite that poem. To Joseph Smith. Rough stone cut from the mountain without hands. Why can't I match my will to your demands? Is it I love the world, the flesh, the devil, too much to sacrifice my taste for evil? Or does my natural self, now slave, now free of this or that, resent the hyperbole of total dedication to one cause, no matter what, in spite of truth or laws? I would in shadows dwell, knowing the rights, the wrongs, the damned, and satisfied with sights of higher kingdoms as they come and go. Christ could assign me to a bungalow. But you, second to Christ in saving men, shall I respect, love, worship, or hate you then? Or can I blend these four as others do and see you next to God and Christ, yet you? Your life is less divine, but more intense. For mortal, it assaults intransigence by proving that the flesh can take, like stone, a polish that approximates God's throne. But there is flesh and flesh, and mine, in doubt, laziness, lust, and pride decked out, resists the edge of Christ and keeps its feel, battered, but never rounded by the wheel. The certain call of God comes to but few. I cannot hear as easily as could you. That's the end of the poem. I'm sorry to say hardly anything has changed since 1964. And that's only a half comic idea here at this comedy routine. I'm gonna maybe finish it out. I want to recite you a poem about my dad. It's a long poem, so we can kind of maybe just sort of relax. And if you have to leave or take another bite of your sandwich or belch or whatever you want to do, this is folksy. So the other one was kind of formal. If there's still time, we'll do something else. This is called Windshield Time. And I wrote this for my father. My father was a truck driver. Windshield Time. My dad, he was a truck driving man from L.A. to Dago and up to San Fran. This was back in the days when the freeways weren't even thought of. He hauled furniture and he hauled freight all up and down the Golden State. And I can't remember not wanting to be just like him. He drove 101, an old 99, that miserable stretch they call the Grapevine. And sometimes, if I was good, he'd take me along. I loved to get out and kick the tires. And we'd watch for trucks with their brakes on fire. If they made it to the bottom, they'd roll halfway to Bakersfield. I guess you could say I worshipped my dad. He gave me the first job I ever had. But I had to start where he did, right at the bottom. He showed me the business end of a broom, and I swept the head in the driver's room. I knew he was testing me, so I pretended to like it. After a while, I was loading trucks. Dad called me Spider, and the name stuck. I was skinny and small. I still am. But I worked like hell. And sometimes, he'd let me ride around town picking things up and putting things down with some old guy who was worn out and needed a helper. That was the part I liked best. Thinking up wisecracks and bumming cigarettes, watching the girls and getting paid for it besides. Dad used to call it windshield time. Them trucks was so bumpy it was a crime. My butt'd get so sore I'd have to shift from one cheek to the other. Dad was pretty careful though, even then. He always sent me with married men when I finally got my chance to go out on the road. And I'd end up smoking rum-soaked cigars and nursing a Coke in some topless bar, listening to some guy brag about his wife and children. Once when I talked about quitting school, Dad looked at me like I was a fool. He never said yes or no, but I got the message. He always made sure I had time for my studies and football and goofing off with my buddies. I'd pick up my windshield time on weekends and summers. I wondered if the day would ever arrive when we'd trade places and he'd teach me to drive. But every time I asked him, he'd just change the subject. He acted like it was no big deal. But I'll bet if he'd let me behind the wheel and I'd felt the call of the highway, I'd have been a goner. As it was, I was getting kind of hooked on knowledge. So I went and applied up north to college. And I got a scholarship so big you could hardly believe it. Mom, she said it was an answer to prayer. And Dad just smiled and rumpled my hair. I knew he was proud, but he tried like heck not to show it. So I put aside my dreams and fears and I went up to Stanford for the next 4 years. But I never did feel at home around all that money. I'd get lonely and the tests were rough and the competition was pretty tough. But I could write like the devil and I got me some grades to prove it. After that, there was no stopping me. I rolled right on to a PhD like a truck with its brakes on fire at the bottom of a hill. And when the bill collectors was right behind me, Dad'd tell the drivers where they could find me. When he couldn't send cash, he sent me the chance to earn it. Well, I got married, and I had a career.
teaching folks Chaucer and grammar and Shakespeare. And I hardly lift anything heavier than a kid or a pencil. But you know, whenever I start to bitch and moan, my dad will say something that you could chisel into stone. Like, well, son, it's better than sweeping crap out of cuckoo clocks. Dad retired a few years back after a couple of heart attacks and a quadruple bypass after 40 years of Luckies. But you know, he still can't shake them truck driving habits. That man a double clutch a Volkswagen Rabbit. He flips his lights every time a truck goes by. Sometimes in the middle of the night when I'm grading papers or trying to write, I'll hear the whine of a diesel way out on the freeway. I'll start chewing the end of my pen, and I'm back on that grapevine. We're doing about 10. And I'm curled up beside my dad in that drafty old tractor. Then I look up, and there's my daughter. She's saying, "Daddy, can I have a drink of water? Would you believe I'm living with a couple of girls?" I finally get her tucked back in bed and try to get some more papers read. That kid's got a mind of her own, no two ways about it. She's going to surprise me before she's through. And really, there's not much you can do but love them and guide them and try not to smother their freedom. I think I'm finally beginning to see why Dad made sure I grew up to be me. Because deep down inside, you know, I think he wanted me to be a trucker. We were going to start our own truck line. That's one dream that died on the vine. He saw where I was going a whole lot sooner than I did. But you know, there's some dreams you just can't replace. I'd still like to see the look on his face if I pulled up in front of his house in a 16-wheeler. Man, I'd show him where to find all them gears and we'd swap some lies over a couple of beers. It's never going to happen. But I won't ever stop thinking about it. These days, Dad, he's learning how to paint. And Mom's still trying to become a saint. And I keep putting down one line after another. I thought at first I'd write him a song. Tell him I love him. Now it's too damn long. But you know, like my dad said, "Bob, if bullcrap was a brass band, you'd be a symphony orchestra." That's the end of it.